What's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Okay, welcome back, guys. Happy Monday, new week.
Happy Monday.
Yeah. Before we get started, we do want to give you guys an update on some of the details that have came out about the Idaho killings. A lot of details have been released recently, court documents, affidavits, things like that. So Haley is going to fill you guys in on what we know so far.
Yeah, I know we've gotten a lot of questions about this, and we were kind of holding off on talking about it until more details came out. But right. Now that they have, we want to share the facts so that that's all that's, you know, being out there, because there's a lot of theories and things popping up.
Oh, yeah.
And so here's kind of an overview and what's going on. And we also are sharing a lot more of this on our Instagram and in our Facebook group. So be sure to go over there if you want to kind of stay up to date daily. But what we know so far, if you are unaware, in November, on November 13th, four University of Idaho students were murdered in their home in Moscow, Idaho. They were found in the morning. They had all been stabbed to death. It was three girls who lived at the apartment, Kaylee, Madison, and Zanna, and then Zanna's boyfriend, Ethan. So it started off obviously being terrifying for the whole community, because nobody knew who could do this, how this could happen. And for a long time, no suspects were named. So the police were working on the case, but to the public, it seemed like they weren't making any progress. All they announced,
they were tight-lipped. They were
very tight-lipped. And they announced they were looking for information about a white Hyundai Elantra, but that was it. Now, somebody has been arrested, and the affidavit, as Andrea said, was recently released, and we actually know that the police department was doing an amazing job investigating, and it was good that they were tight-lipped, because this person, I think, had no idea that they had figured out who he was.
Yep.
So in the affidavit, they first kind of described the crime scene. So in case you didn't know, there were two surviving roommates. One was on the first floor and one was on the second floor. And this is actually something that came out with the affidavit. Everybody thought that both of them were on the first floor, but one was on the second floor. Zanna and Ethan were found in her room on the second floor. And then Kaylee and Madison were found on the third floor in, I think, Madison's room. Yeah, because in Kaylee's room was her dog. Dog's okay. I've gotten a lot of questions about that. The dog is okay. And so they shared that in the affidavit, and they also shared that they found a knife sheath, which is like the cover of a knife that you like put over it.
Protects the blade from cutting the person. Yeah.
Right. So they found a knife sheath in one of the rooms, and on that sheath, on the one of the snaps of it, they found male DNA. So we did not know this until the affidavit came out, and we'll talk more about the DNA in a second. After they explained the crime scene and what they found, they talked about kind of where they went from there. So they basically used surveillance footage from security cameras, ring cameras, like doorbell cameras, everything that they could get access to, and they found a white Hyundai Elantra that they believed was the suspect's car, because this car was kind of circling the house a lot near the time of the murders, and they kind of put together that this was the suspect's car. So they were able to basically start looking at everybody in the area who owned that car or a similar car. They then started looking at Washington State University Pullman, which is a nearby university. It's about 10 miles away. And I don't know if they kind of figured out the suspect before this or after this. We obviously don't know everything, but they started looking at WSU Pullman's security cameras. And there, they again found several white Hyundai Elantras. So the WSU Police Department started basically looking into all of the Hyundai Elantra owners. And they found one man, Brian Koberger, who is a PhD candidate at WSU. And when they looked at him or looked into his car, they found a recent, like, not arrest record, but a, like, pulled over, like, traffic stop. Mm-hmm. And in that, they were able to get a picture of his driver's license. That driver's license showed him with bushy eyebrows, which matched what one of the surviving roommates saw.
Right.
So this was something we did not know before, but one of the surviving roommates, the one on the second floor, actually witnessed this man in the house that night.
So wild. I could not. That, like, shook me.
Mm-hmm. Me too. It is so freaky. So she basically described, you know, stuff that she heard. She heard some voices. She heard some talking. And then at some point she opened her door. And I think she opened her door a couple times. But the last time she opened her door, she saw a man, a white man, wearing all black with a black mask over his nose and mouth. And he was walking towards the sliding glass doors that are presumed where he entered and exited. After that, she locked herself in her room, terrified. Now, a lot of people have been saying, why didn't she call 911 right away? All, like, giving her a bunch of shit. And
yeah.
That needs to stop.
You don't know what you would fucking do in that situation, so.
Mm-hmm. You don't know what you would do.
They haven't ruled. I mean, obviously, like, we don't know any other details as to what they questioned her and, like, her, yeah, you know, and so we don't need to jump to conclusions. Like,
yeah, she's
innocent.
Yeah, and if she
innocent.
Was involved, she would be arrested.
Right.
Like,
right.
She
exactly.
has nothing to do with this. She may have been in shock. She was likely drinking that night, maybe doing drugs that night. She was probably thought she was hallucinating. If she didn't think she was hallucinating, why would she think that this was a murderer? Like,
yeah.
She probably thought this was somebody that one of her they roommates knew. Picked up at a bar. Or
right.
even if she thought it was a thief, she's not going to assume that her roommates are being murdered. They were killed
right.
in their sleep, so it was relatively quiet. So she's not thinking that. She's in shock. She's in fear. So,
and she's not going to take him on. Like, she's not going to,
yeah.
like, jump on his back and attack him. Like, I mean, maybe, but if she doesn't, then that's her prerogative, you know?
Yeah. And maybe if she was very afraid, she didn't want to call 911 and make noise because she didn't know mm-hmm. that if he was gone. And
right.
she's not, if I were her, I'm not going to leave my room and check. Like, I'm going to hide
no.
there all night. So, anyway, she described him as having bushy eyebrows. And when the WSU Pullman police found Brian Koberger's driver's license from that report, he had bushy eyebrows. So that was one kind of connection they started to make.
Right.
It sounds like from sources, and this isn't from law enforcement, but it sounds like he was identified very early on, like within days.
Yeah.
And then they basically surveilled him, watched him, kind of put together a whole timeline. There's a whole explanation of where his car movements and then his cell phone pings. His cell phone was turned off during the time that the murders actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back up in Idaho and then back to Pullman, and his car is tracked around there. So there's a bunch of other evidence as well.
And he got a new license plate, which is really
yes. well,
strange.
He got new tags.
Yeah.
He registered
yeah.
his car. His car was registered in Pennsylvania. He registered his car in Washington. And interestingly, and I found this very like telling, because obviously they weren't able to get a license plate from the car in any mm-hmm. of the surveillance, because if they were, they would have been able to identify it faster. But mm-hmm. interestingly, in Pennsylvania, you don't have to have a front plate. But in Idaho and Washington, you do have to have a front plate. So there's not as many cars that don't have a front plate. And the one seen in the surveillance footage did not have a front plate.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
But so they were surveilling this man and watching him. He went home to Pennsylvania and he was with his family who lives in Pennsylvania. And they were able to collect the family's trash after it was discarded. Because if you didn't know, once you discard trash, it's public property. Anybody
yep.
can go grab it. From that trash, they were able to get DNA from Koberger's father. And that DNA matched the DNA on the knife sheath. It's like a 99.9998% probability that the DNA from the trash is the suspect's father.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it matched, and that was like the nail in the coffin to be able to arrest him. All this being said, it sounds like there's a lot. There is so much more that we don't even know.
Yeah.
They put the bare bones in an affidavit just enough to be able to prove that they can arrest this man. So there is likely more. So, Brian Koberger was arrested in Pennsylvania. He was extradited to Idaho. He had his initial hearing in front of the magistrate where basically he's read his charges, and they set up a preliminary hearing for January 12th. After that, they'll kind of start working through when he'll be able to enter his plea and all of that. His public defender in Pennsylvania kept saying he's looking forward to being extradited. So from that, it seems like he's going to try to claim his innocence. Mm-hmm. But that being said, they might have not known all the evidence they have. So once he sees all this evidence, maybe he'll try to take a plea deal. We don't know, because right now the death penalty is on the table. So he might try to take a plea away from it. What's very creepy is this man is a criminology student. He studied criminal justice in undergrad and was currently pursuing his PhD in criminology. He did a very creepy study where he, I mean, it's not creepy in itself, but when you know he's now arrested for a quadruple homicide, it's creepy, because he was basically asking ex-cons about like why they committed a crime, how they felt during it, how they made their decisions. So it's just freaky.
Did you read his like I saw it on Reddit, like his original like post or whatever. Ugh.
It's very creepy.
It is.
So yeah, there's a lot to unpack. There's a lot we still don't know. We don't know why motives. We don't know if he knew them. His phone did ping near the house 12 times before the murders, but we don't know if that directly points to him being like stalking that house or just being in the area. We don't know. So there is still a lot unknown. You know, we obviously, Andrea and I have been speculating together, but we try not to share too much of that just because it's not known and we don't want to spread misinformation. So we hope that you guys can do the same, and we'll definitely keep you guys updated on facts that come out. Like I said, more daily updates on our Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. So be sure to follow us there. You can always find everything in our show notes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't the Idaho police still asking for tips and information and things like that?
Yeah, they are. So if you know anything, please reach out to the Idaho Police Department. There's also currently a gag order. So basically law enforcement, nobody can say anything to the media. So everything that comes out will be either from other sources or through like court documents. So it's frustrating, but just be patient. You know, like
it takes time.
We have to,
And we want them to be thorough. We want these four young people to get justice. So,
yeah. And if you think about it, had they released any of this information earlier, even that there was DNA, who knows? Koberger might have tried to flee. Mm-hmm. He had likely had no clue that they had DNA, had any idea who he was. And that's why he didn't try to flee. And that's why they don't share the information. So even though as the public, and I know the victims' families were frustrated, it's like sometimes you have to let the police do their job. And they were clearly doing a very good job. So
yeah,
props to them. And hopefully this thing, you know, hopefully they have a strong case against him and he can pay for what he did.
Yeah.
So thank you for that update.
Yeah.
If you guys have questions, feel free to, you know, reach out to us. But like I said, we're posting more about it on our socials, so there will be more information and updates there.
All right. So now I'm going to just jump into today's case. This is a disappearance, and it is sadly still unsolved. But I'm going to be covering the disappearance of Amber Renee Barker.
I don't think I know this. Like,
I didn't know it either. I had never heard it. Why did I see it on? I don't remember. I like just constantly am looking for cases, especially unsolved disappearances, because that's like my, you know, one of my soft spots.
Your jam. Yeah.
And I just saw this little girl's face and I was like, I need to share her story. And sadly, there's not a lot out there about it, especially recently. So
that's frustrating. Okay.
Yeah. If you're looking for an easy way to eat well and save money this year, like everybody else in the new year, then HelloFresh has your back. You can cut back on expensive takeout and delivery, and you'll love how fast, easy, and affordable it is to whip up a restaurant-quality meal right in your own kitchen.
being pregnant right now, the last thing I want to do at the end of the day is come up with a meal to cook, make sure we have all the ingredients and put it together. So I've been loving getting HelloFresh delivered each week because it has all the ingredients right there, easy instructions to follow, and I get a delicious meal that's not frozen pizza. My goal in the new year is to eat well to keep myself and this baby healthy. And with HelloFresh, eating well in the new year is stress-free. There are over 35 weekly recipes to give you options to reach whatever your goal may be. You can even customize some meals by swapping proteins or sides, upgrading your proteins, or even adding a protein to a veggie dish, which I love because sometimes my pregnancy aversions don't always agree.
I feel that. So for me, as a busy mom of three, HelloFresh saves me a ton of time on those nights where we're all just trying to survive till bedtime. Usually I can make a delicious HelloFresh meal in less than 30 minutes, which is amazing. This last week, we got these Italian chicken sandos, which are like these Ooh. Yummy little sub sandwiches. And even my picky four-year-old loved them.
That's awesome.
They're honestly... hasn't been a meal from HelloFresh we haven't enjoyed. And I'm not just saying that because they are our sponsor today.
And my husband loves all the meals too. And he is similar to Andrea's picky four-year-old. When you are ready to try out HelloFresh, you can get 21 free meals and free shipping by using our link. Go to HelloFresh.com/inhuman21 and use code inhuman21 for 21 free meals plus free shipping.
To try out HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit, go to HelloFresh.com/inhuman21 and use code inhuman21 for 21 free meals plus free shipping. On Thursday, December 18th, 1997, 10-year-old Amber Renee Barker was riding her blue 10-speed bike to a friend's house. It was around 3 p.m. and her friend lived about half a mile away. When she arrived, Amber called her mother Bonnie to let her know that she got there okay, and her mother told her that she wanted her home by 6 p.m.
Okay.
So Amber and her friend hung out for a few hours, and then Amber headed home at about 5:50 p.m. So I think it was like a 5-minute bike ride. So, you know, she had plenty of time to get there before 6.
Right.
By 7:20 p.m., when Amber hadn't arrived back to her home, her mother grew concerned and decided to go out and look for her along the route that she knew she would have taken home. There was no sign of her daughter, so Bonnie immediately called the police.
Oh, this always freaks me out.
I know.
And obviously we know she disappeared, but whenever it's like... she was supposed to be home and the parents went and looked on her normal route and she's not there. It's like,
I know. Ugh. And there's like, it's such a short distance. Like where could she have gone? You know?
Right.
So right away, police launched a massive search for Amber. Oklahoma City police, along with FBI agents, Amber's family and volunteers from their community began looking for any sign of the little girl.
Wow, so the FBI got involved right away.
Yeah, I feel like they do in kids' cases.
Kids, yeah.
Pretty normal for them to do that. The main area that they focused on was Drexel Boulevard, as that was the area Amber would have been riding her bike home from her friend's house to her own.
Okay.
And the OKCPD set up a computer program called Rapid Start, which would help police organize tips and any other information coming in about Amber's disappearance. And that was all kept at the command center for Amber's search.
Okay.
Amber's sister, Tanya, and her aunt, Joan, passed out missing persons flyers during the search. And while they were doing this, they ran into a man who claimed to have witnessed Amber riding her bike along Drexel Boulevard around 5:25. But this conflicted with the original reports that Amber didn't leave her friend's house until 5:50. So
that's suspicious.
I know. It's unclear, too, as to if they, like, ruled this man out as a suspect, who this man was. Absolutely none of the police or none of the news articles had this man's name, so I'm assuming he was cleared.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But it is interesting and worth noting, like, the time differences, but also people don't always remember things the best in these situations. And 525 and 550, I mean, yeah, that's like a, what, 20 minute difference or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like,
yeah.
25 minutes.
25 minutes. I can't do math. We know this.
But I feel like you're like, yeah, especially if you're not thinking anything's going to be wrong. You know, like you're not paying attention to the time. Like,
right. And you're not like, oh, there's a little girl on the bike. What time is it? Okay, 525.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. So I don't really think that that's
yeah.
The time necessarily has to be like taken into, oh my gosh, the time's
that's factual.
Off. Like he definitely did it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Amber's family later said in an interview that they think that maybe the little girl he saw wasn't Amber. So,
oh, interesting. I mean,
we don't know one way or the other, but that could be a theory as well.
Right. That could be why he was ruled out too.
Yeah.
If he was, like, maybe it wasn't what he thought he saw.
Right. So the next morning on December 18th, around 10:30 a.m., Amber's 10-speed bike was discovered in Denison Park.
Okay.
So this park is not along the route Amber would have taken home the previous evening. Okay. So that's, you know, kind of not a good sign.
Yeah.
And the bike was found next to a tree within the park. Police originally thought that they had a theory that maybe Amber had been hit by a car on her way home. But once they discovered the bike was unscathed, they kind of ruled that theory out.
Right.
On December 20th, searchers found a beige sweater that they knew belonged to Amber, as well as a shoe. Another shoe was found a block away, one sock, and a silver ring. And these were all found along Drexel Boulevard, which would have been the route she would have taken home that evening.
Okay.
It's reported that Amber's underwear and pants have never been recovered, even to this day.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
Investigators were able to retrieve blood, hair, and fiber evidence near Amber's belongings.
Okay.
Along with this evidence, police also found blue fibers on her sweater, as well as vomit mixed with possible semen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the picture this painted to investigators was not good.
Mm-mm.
This, of course, indicated to police that Amber may have been sexually assaulted by whoever took her.
Yeah.
They were able to test the small amount of blood found on one of her shoes. There was a teeny tiny, like, barely noticeable drop of blood on one of her shoes, which they did not test until several years later because, I guess, DNA was not where it was in 97.
Right.
And they were able to confirm that it was male DNA, but they have not been able to link it to any suspects or any persons of interest in this case.
Huh. Okay.
So let's talk about one person of interest in Amber's disappearance, and that is Daniel John Smith.
Okay.
Smith was 24 years old at the time of Amber's disappearance. Smith was also in a common law marriage with Amber's older sister, Debbie, who was 22 at the time, and the two of them shared a child.
Okay.
So for those that don't know, common law marriage is recognized in some states, not many at all, but it's basically when a couple has been together for X amount of years, they are legally recognized as being married, despite not having to purchase a marriage license or having a legal marriage ceremony.
Do they have to live together?
Yeah, they have to live together and be together for like in South Carolina, I don't know anymore. I didn't even look it up because it's not relevant to me. But it used to be like you had to be together for 7 years, living together and together for 7 years to be considered common law married.
Okay, got it.
So like I said, very few states still recognize common law marriages today. So it's just very uncommon. But they were considered in a common law marriage.
Okay.
Smith had been arrested and convicted of attempted kidnapping in 1995, which would have been 2 years prior to this incident. He received a second charge of intimidating a state's witness after he threatened a security guard at a court hearing. He admitted to assaulting a woman in Oklahoma City while he was intoxicated, and he alleged that he was only trying to steal her car keys. But the woman claimed that he also tried to rape her. So with that, Smith pled guilty and was sentenced to a 5-year deferred prison sentence and 4 months at a boot camp at William S. Key Correctional Center for Young Adults.
Okay.
And there he earned excellent reviews. And as a result, prosecutors dropped the charge for intimidating a state's witness.
Okay.
Yeah. As part of Smith's lesser sentence, he agreed to join Alcoholics Anonymous, attend regular counseling sessions, and maintain part-time employment. He was also assigned a parole officer and had to meet with them once a month. But despite all of this, Smith could not stay away from his legal issues. On November 30th, 1997, police arrived at the home of Debbie Barker. Apparently, according to Debbie, Smith had struck her after she refused his sexual advances. And this is his common law wife, by the way.
Okay.
He was given a citation by authorities, but was never arrested. He was then given a court date for January 1998 in Oklahoma City Municipal Court. After Amber disappeared, Smith missed one of his AA meetings, which was a term of his parole, so they immediately issued a warrant for his arrest. Then, on December 21st, police found a silver Mitsubishi pickup truck at a convenience store on Sunny Lane Road, and the truck belonged to Daniel Smith. Volunteers from the Del Air Neighborhood Watch Association, along with officers from the OKCPD, began searching for Smith in and around Ray Trent Park because, you know, he's got the warrant out for him. And they wanted to question him more about Amber's disappearance.
Yeah.
And for reference, this park is about 11 miles from Denniston Park, which was where Amber's bike was recovered. So it's all kind of like in that same area.
Right.
At 11:30 a.m., police made a gruesome discovery.
Oh, no.
There, hanging from a tree over Crutcho Creek in Ray Trent Park, was Smith's body.
Oh, my God.
And his death was later ruled a suicide.
Okay.
So, that's not looking good, yeah.
Did he leave a suicide note?
No. After this incident, Amber's mother, Bonnie, revealed that shortly before Amber's disappearance, she had come to her mother expressing fear of Smith. Oh. It's alleged that Amber told her mother that she was afraid that Smith would force her into his truck and take her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Amber's father, Robert, told police that Amber had told him also that Smith had tried to force her into his truck on December 17th, the day before she went missing.
Okay.
Yeah. And Amber's brother, Eddie, corroborated this account. Okay. So, yeah. Very, very all pointing in one direction.
Yeah. It's obviously not, none of this is like, for sure he did it, but putting it all together and then him taking his own life, not leaving a note, not explaining. You know, there's many reasons he might have done that, but it's hard to ignore the everything.
All the arrows pointing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So along with this vital piece of information, it was later revealed in January of 98 in the Daily Oklahoman that Smith was at Bonnie's home the day Amber went missing. Not only that, but that evening when Amber called her mother from her friend's house telling her she would return home by 6 p.m., Smith was there and overheard that call.
Okay.
According to the police affidavit, quote, shortly after the call, Smith left the Barker residence in a direction that would have put him in line to have met up with Amber as she was headed home.
Hmm.
Originally, Smith was not considered a suspect in Amber's disappearance, and even till this day, he has never been officially named a suspect. But now police, along with most of Amber's family, they all suspect that he has at least knowledge about her disappearance.
Right. Again, it's hard to to ignore everything that's pointing towards it.
It is. So Smith was questioned after Amber's disappearance, and his account of that evening was that he was at the Barker home. Afterwards, he left and went to a local club to drink alcohol. Then he drove around drinking beer for the remainder of that evening. According to police, there was not enough evidence to detain Smith at that time, and Smith had a long history of alcohol and drug abuse, as well as a history of crime and violence, but unfortunately, that's not enough to convict somebody of kidnapping or abduction or anything like that.
Yeah.
He also had a pretty terrible upbringing. At 6 years old, Smith was removed from the care of his biological mother, and he was raised in foster care for the remainder of his adolescent and teen years.
Okay.
So Debbie, his wife, quote unquote, did not believe that Smith was involved in her sister's disappearance. And she claimed that another man was responsible, though she has never publicly named who she suspects it is.
Okay.
Debbie has also alluded to the fact that she does not believe that Smith's death was a suicide, though there has never been any evidence brought forth publicly that anything else could have possibly occurred.
Okay.
So it's like speculation from her, and she's not really coming forth with information as to why she thinks this. Okay. And maybe, like, if it is true, which we don't know for certain, but maybe she's fearful for her own safety. I don't know.
Right. So is that kind of thinking, like, somebody else was involved, killed him to keep him quiet kind of thing?
Yeah. I suspect, and this is just my little two cents on it, I think several people are involved, and I don't think it's as cut and dry as just he did it and then he took his own life.
Okay.
But that's just my little
interesting.
Cents. Yeah. So after police discovered Smith's truck, they performed a thorough search of the vehicle. They noticed the truck had blue cloth seats, blue carpet, and a blue vinyl dashboard, which, if you remember, they were able to pull blue fibers from Amber's sweater that was found during the initial search.
Could they match the fibers?
So that's... I don't know. No, we don't know.
Okay.
So they also recovered some hair from the passenger and driver's side of his vehicle as well. And it's completely unclear whether they were able to test and link any of that evidence to Amber's disappearance. And I'm just assuming it's because they have very little to go on and the case is still ongoing and unsolved. So, but at the same time, I'm like, they probably can't link any of the DNA to anyone, either the samples are too small or whatever. Because I would think a hair, they would be able to be like, okay, this is Amber's hair. But
yeah, exactly.
At the same time, she was also the sister of his wife.
True.
So she could have been in that vehicle.
Right.
Anytime, you know? So it's not enough for them to be like, this is it. This is our smoking gun.
Okay.
On January 15th of 2015, so this is like several years later, the lead investigator on Amber's case filed a search warrant requesting DNA samples from an inmate, Forrest J. Rice.
Okay.
Rice, who also sometimes went by the name Stephen Henley, admitted to police that he was with Daniel Smith at his apartment the night that Amber went missing.
All right.
He also admitted to being with Smith the day he ended his life.
All right.
So he is tied to this case, and they have requested his DNA. We do not know the outcome of that request. Again, like I said, this case has very little updated information on it, but it is still open and ongoing, so... Another man police believe may have information about Amber's case is Joseph Bishop. Bishop was dating another one of Amber's sisters, Brandy, at the time of her disappearance, And he too was interviewed by police after Amber vanished and was given a polygraph test. And he's been cleared. Huh. At least okay. for now.
Through polygraph?
Yeah. I guess. Okay.
Maybe the DNA didn't match.
Yeah, I don't think the DNA... From what I can gather, the DNA didn't match anyone. Even Daniel Smith.
So I wonder if maybe it like wasn't a very good DNA sample or like wasn't enough.
It was very tiny. I mean, it was the teeniest, tiniest drop of blood on her shoe.
Yeah, because I feel like they would either be able to like rule out completely or say this person did it. So it's like, yeah, I feel like maybe there wasn't enough sample to be able to like connect.
Yeah,
I think which is really frustrating.
And the semen sample too, because if it was mixed with vomit, which is like, God, that stresses me out. But if it was mixed with vomit, they were maybe not able to separate it and get a good enough sample to test.
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist, so I don't really know how all that works and plays out, but...
DNA is tricky.
It is. It is. And it's weird because we think like, oh, you have this DNA sample, like, oh, you can test it like 8,000 times. And no, every time you test it, it lessens what they have. So they don't want to keep retesting it because things are going to progress and they want to have a good sample for when that time comes.
Yeah.
So according to an interview with News 9, Bishop believes that Smith knew what happened to Amber and he likely took that information to his grave.
Okay.
So that's kind of what led me to believe that maybe some other people were involved. And maybe Smith was the main person responsible.
Right.
Sadly, in 2013, Amber's sister Brandy was killed in an apparent storm incident.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Her body was recovered in a ditch. So she was living in a pull behind camper. And according to reports, there was a severe storm and she died as a result of that.
Okay.
But her mother, Bonnie, does not believe that Brandy was killed due to an incident involving weather. And she claims that there was not even a storm that day.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And there were rumors that her daughter died from an overdose, but some people believe that she was murdered. So these are all speculations, obviously. We don't have any of that confirmed. And her death has been ruled an accident due to weather.
Okay.
So none of that has been confirmed by police. And tragically, in 2014, Bonnie, the mother, also passed away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So they've had a lot of tragedy in this family.
Yeah.
It's really awful. To this day, Amber's case is still unsolved. Investigators, along with their Crimes Against Children unit, have gone over every piece of evidence with fresh eyes to see if there was anything they may have missed the first time around. They fully believe that someone knows the whole story, or at least enough of the story to put the pieces together. And even after all these years, they still want to hear from that person. Because that information is so, so vital to closing Amber's case.
Yeah.
At the time of Amber's disappearance, she was in the fourth grade at James Monroe Elementary School. Amber was one of eight children born to Robert and Bonnie Barker.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, her parents divorced when she was younger, and she did live predominantly with her mother and some of her siblings.
Okay.
Amber was a cute, spunky, brown-haired, brown-eyed little girl.
She's so cute.
I know. She really is. She was known to love animals, love working on cars. She loved riding her bike and painting. Amber was considered a little bit on the tomboyish side, and she had dreams of one day becoming a welder.
Oh.
This little girl deserves justice, and if you have any information about her disappearance, you are urged to call Crime Stoppers at 405-235-7300 or the Oklahoma City Police Department at 405-297-1290 or the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigations at 1-800-522-8017. There is a reward being offered from the OKCPD for information leading to Amber's whereabouts.
And you can usually submit tips anonymously, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I mentioned a few minutes ago, that there's not a lot on this case. And the last news update for her case was in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's cold, and it, I think, is fully capable of being solved. And I think someone just needs to step forward and do the right thing.
Hopefully with improvements in DNA technology, whether that being, you know, genetic genealogy, being able to match something, or just improvements so that testing a small sample doesn't destroy the sample, you know, like being able to test small samples more, hopefully will lead to some answers someday.
I hope so.
Because it baffles me that they have so many suspects that seem so to potentially have been involved.
Yeah.
And they just haven't officially cleared them or connected them. To me, that just says like they haven't been able to test the DNA because it's so small and they're like, they don't want to waste it. And I get that. But I hope that one day that DNA will come through.
I know, me too. And I think it can. And I think they just need that one little something to just push the case and have somebody care about it. Like telling her story, getting her name out there, you know, bringing more awareness to the case, having people care and demand that more be done. I think those are the things that need to be done in this case for it to get solved.
Yeah. All it takes is like a fresh pair of eyes. And there might be something now that can be tested, but since it's gone cold and maybe the police department doesn't have the resources to, you know, work on as many cold cases, I don't know, with that police department, but that often seems to happen. Fresh eyes, they might be able to already match something and they just haven't had the time or the resources to do so. So, definitely getting her name out there.
Yeah. So we would love to hear what you guys think about this case. We will be posting photos of Amber, her family, the suspects, or persons of interest, I guess I should say, because no one's been officially ruled a suspect, over on our Instagram and our Facebook. So let us know what you think. But that is all I have for you guys today. Oh, just kidding.
We have a little announcement.
We do have a little announcement, which some of you probably already know, but the ones that don't, we have something really exciting to share with you.
If you don't follow us on Instagram, and even if you do follow us, you might have not seen it.
Yeah, I was surprised at how many people didn't know still. I was like,
I guess we just posted it on our story once and then like didn't officially announce it on our feed. But if you missed it, I, Haley, if you didn't know who's talking right now, I'm pregnant.
Yay!
I am expecting a little baby in June, and my husband and I are very excited. And yeah, so that's partially why some of these episodes have been late recently, because I have been oh so sick, and I don't know how Andrea did it when she was pregnant with the twins, because we were always on time, so props to her. But we are very excited to add another tiny human to our inhuman family, and yeah, just wanted to share that with you guys since we hadn't announced it, and I know not everyone follows us on socials and stuff, so now you know. Once we reveal the gender, you'll also know. And Andrea and I get to see each other this week.
This weekend!
Which is so exciting.
I'm so excited.
Andrea's coming out for our gender reveal, so we'll take lots of pictures together and, you know, show you guys. But yeah.
Yeah. We're so excited to be adding another little baby to our little fam on Inhuman. But thank you guys for listening, and we will catch up with you guys on Thursday with a brand new case. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.